Wow. I feel like I got to have my 4th of July celebration. Yeah. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good morning on Facebook Live. I hope we have sound by now. Fred's working away on it, but those of us that are in the room, we're listening. Oh, so good to be here. So we're officially in the second half of 2020. So I know, right? How'd that happen? And so it seemed appropriate that at the midway point, we pause and we refine our spiritual practices. That's our theme for the month. We're diving deep into refining our spiritual practices. And what a great way to start it out, Diana. That was just such a beautiful, beautiful centering practice for all of us. So our spiritual practices are the way, I say, or a way, to prepare ourselves, to provide the container for spirit to move through us. And I know I'm talking to the choir here. I know we all do our spiritual practices. We're just going to take them a little deeper. So today, freedom practices. It's appropriate, not just because we just celebrated 4th of July, our Independence Day, and we like to remember that we're independent thinkers, although that is lovely. As we renew, we lift up, we inspire our spiritual practices, we actually do in experience an increase in freedom. Have you ever experienced that? Yes, I have as well. Science of Mind teaches limitation is not a thing, not an entity, but a belief. Freedom is a divine reality. True freedom is the ability to make conscious choices in every aspect of our life. True freedom means we can make conscious choices in every aspect of our life, not just the easy ones, the comfortable ones, but in all of the ones, even the challenging ones. And our first freedom practice for today is... You're holding your breath? It's my favorite. Daily, dedicated spiritual practices. And I'm taking my references from Novatech Ministries, the work of Marcia Sutton and Lloyd Strom, and using that as my reference. The meat of the freedom practice, the juice of it, the practical, what to do to have more freedom is all about our daily dedicated spiritual practice, and that is, of course, all about being. No other activity in a daily dedicated spiritual practice is involved. And that means as much as we love to have the experience of when I'm doing the dishes, it's a meditative experience, that's not the same. That's commingling. A true daily dedicated spiritual practice is communing with God and nothing else. It's the willingness to set aside everything else and just be in that place. Every spiritual practice is pleasurable. The only thing difficult about it is overcoming our resistance to doing it. And this is true whether we're backsliding into our practice by commingling, which is it's fine. It's just not a daily dedicated spiritual practice. And it's the thing that allows us to kind of notice, take gauge of how we're doing with that. Am I able to set aside everything else for 5 minutes, for 15 minutes, for 20 minutes, for however, whatever your time period is, and we're going to talk about that in a minute too, and just be. Just notice how you feel about the idea. Maybe it's something you already do. It's already just very natural for you, you're doing that already, and some of us might be having a little bit of resistance to that. And either way, we're here to deepen it, to deepen our experience with the idea. And so the thing about it is we all have fears, we all have difficulties in our life, we all have challenges. Oh, wait, is there someone that doesn't? I want to know you. Text me. I find I would much rather face my difficulties, face my uncertainties, face my fears in my prayer chair than let them bubble up when I'm interacting in life. I've had enough of those times. I've had enough of those times to tell me that I would rather do it in my prayer chair. So it makes it easier to encounter them when I'm with God in my prayer chair. So you're probably right back there where I was saying that we would go back to the time. How much time should we spend in our daily dedicated spiritual practice? Well, ideally, it's 10% of our day. 10%. However, wherever we are, wherever we're starting, we can start there. If it's more, yay. If it's less, fine. The point is to start where we are and establish a consistent, regular practice. We find that as we do this, and as we allow ourselves to be comfortable with it, and as we allow ourselves to be in the space of it, that what happens is it naturally increases. And so what are some of these practices? Which ones are your favorites? I know you might be muffled in saying it, but what is your favorite spiritual practice? Prayer. Meditation. I'm sure they're saying it on Facebook, reading. Yes, these are all some of the ones that I like to use and that I call to our attention today. Prayer and meditation are, of course, the most basic ones, and they're the ones that we tend to go to immediately. However, there are others to consider. Reading sacred texts, reading enlightened teachers, chanting, the devotional activity of chanting or journaling or contemplation of a particular idea. All of those are really great ways to engage in our spiritual practice. So I'm a big proponent of questions. I like to ask myself questions, and I like to ask us questions, because I think that they tend to teach us who we are. It allows us to know who we are. When I ask a question of myself and I hear myself answer it, sometimes I'm really surprised by what I get. So I have some questions for us. I'm calling them freedom questions. So the freedom questions that we might ask in the area of increasing our daily dedicated spiritual practice, there are two of them. The first question is, what amount of time am I willing to spend on a daily basis? What amount of time am I willing to spend on a daily basis and then notice the resistance, notice the automatic, notice that, well, I already got that, and let it take you a little further. The second question that I offer for us is, what new practice or practices am I willing to initiate? And then notice your resistance. Notice the, Patty, I don't need to. I got this. I'm good. I already got this. You know what's happening, right? When we say, I'm good, I got this, what are we doing? Yeah, we're resisting and we're shutting down. The spiritual practice is about expanding the portal that we are, through which Spirit is moving itself. As soon as I think that I've got this, that my spiritual practice is good and it's the same one I've been doing for 15 years, but I'm okay with that. You know, I'm comfortable, I'm good. It's time to increase it. More than that, it's time to let ourselves be increased by it. It's time to let ourselves be increased by it. Our next freedom practice that I offer today is also not a new idea to you all. It's right thinking. Right thinking. Right thinking that gives us freedom is how we think about God and ourselves. And what we need to remember first is that nothing that you and I can think can destroy God. But what we think about God can limit our experience of it, of good, of God. Did you get that? Nothing we think can limit God, but how we think about God will limit our experience of it. So I want to continue to expand my thinking about God. I want to continue to expand my idea of right thinking. I want to continue to allow myself to be moved by the right thinking that I have learned and that I am learning. Ernest Holmes wrote, "Real freedom means that man is created in the image of perfection and let alone and allowed to make the discovery for himself." And you know what that means? It means what we're always saying, the only place for the work to be done is right here. We're let alone. The pure potential, the possibility, the infinite is available to all, and we get to discover it, experience it. And the other end of opposite of right thinking, it's another one of my juicy favorites. It's a false belief. You knew that, right? A false belief. I just love a good false belief. I do, because I know that when I encounter a false belief, that there is something greater that is rising up. Every time one of those false beliefs presents itself, there is something greater that is calling to me. There is something greater that is beckoning me. So, as my false belief is set free, so am I. So is true for all of us. And that part that's been stuck, that's been held in place, that's often paralyzing. You guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah. When we look at those beliefs, and we're willing to examine them. We're willing to let them come into the light of truth. We're willing to allow them to show us what has been missing. Then we are set free. So each of us has false beliefs. We all do. And as Lloyd Strom likes to remind us, we can spend a lifetime weeding them out. And we all share a very common belief. And the very common belief that we all share is the belief in separation. And we speak about it a lot because it is that false belief that is keeping us from knowing our oneness with God. Keeping us from knowing our oneness with life, with each other. And I don't know about you guys, but today I am noticing it more and more. So it's coming up in my conversation more and more. Us and them, right and wrong, good and bad. But mostly this person, that person. when we're willing to allow, when we're willing to allow ourselves to just notice and just be aware, how do we know it's a false belief, right? How do we know it's a false belief? I mean, I'm right. It's not false. I'm right. They're wrong. My belief isn't false. But if my belief couldn't be true of God, that's a really big clue. If my belief doesn't support that we are one, that you and I are on the same team, that you and I are in this life together, that you are love and I am love and we are love, it's starting to show up as a false belief. If the idea that I'm carrying around with me is limiting me from loving you, that is an indicator. If the belief that I'm carrying around is causing me to withhold myself, chances are it's a false belief. A false belief will deny us our freedom. So how free do I feel with that belief? And can I take it beyond myself? Can I take it beyond me? Am I willing to consider your freedom? And am I willing to consider our freedom? The false belief leaves people out. It leaves God out. So the answer to freedom from separation is right thinking. When we remove the false beliefs, we have a greater experience of freedom. We might affirm, I am allowing a greater opening for the revelation of divine love. We might consider what Emma Curtis Hopkins said, our lives are held together by the glue that is our former way of thinking. Do you like that? Our lives are held together by the glue of our former way of thinking. Ugh. And when we change that thinking, everything else begins to change. Right thinking will always produce right action. When you are thinking correctly, you will intuitively be guided into divine right action. Our problem is, again, as I said earlier, we tend to think that our thinking is right and the other person's thinking is wrong. However, when we consider all of this, there really is some good news. There can be no conflict when truth is in expression. Anytime that there is suffering, that's life's way of telling us that we are believing something that is not true. And it is inclusive. If there's suffering of one, there's suffering of all. If we have not yet established that we are one, that we feel each other's pain, we feel each other's separation, suffering, then, well, we have. We have come to know that. We do feel it. If one is suffering, we all are. So the way to right thinking is love. You knew I'd get there eventually, right? Because love really is always the answer. Love is really always where we go. Love is the awareness of oneness. Love is a force, power that expresses the unity of all of life. So if love is missing, it's a false belief. And when love is missing, what do we want to do? We want to rise up to it. Don't we just automatically kind of go like that? We rise up, we lift up, we move up, we lift up our thinking to the divine idea of love. And one of the best ways that I know to do that, to move my thinking, to shift my thinking to right thinking, is the beautiful practice of affirmative prayer. It is a profound settling in, centering in to a spiritual mind treatment and remembering there's one life. That life is God's life. That life is my life. That life is our life. The freedom question that we can ask for our right thinking. What am I believing in this moment? What am I believing in this moment? If it can't be true of God, it can't be true of me or anyone else. And our third freedom practice is a really simple one. It's very simple, and so it's often forgotten. And it's called naming our good. Naming our good. The true concept of freedom is that there is enough good to go around, since good is universal. But my freedom cannot infringe on yours, nor yours on mine, can it? No. The good we wish to experience and enjoy makes for a better circumstance. So why is it? Why do we hide from our desires? Why is it that we allow ourselves to be discontent? Why is it that we allow ourselves to resist our good? Why is it that we are willing to withhold the movement of God through us? Well, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I'm usually pretty scared to show myself, to reveal myself, to name my good. It might sound, you know, well, Patty, that's way above anything you are. That's pretty ballsy. That's pretty bold. Naming my good before I'm there? You want me to do that? In front of whom? And I don't, because I'm afraid they'll laugh. I don't, because I'm afraid I don't even believe it myself. Why would I expect someone else to believe it? So maybe naming my good doesn't have to happen out here, but it must happen in here. It must happen. When we hide from our desires, when we hide from our good, we limit. We're not experiencing freedom. We're experiencing withholding. So naming our good is a powerful freedom practice. And naming it with people that we can share that with, well, y'all know about that. So the freedom questions that we can ask, what is the good I desire? And if this were true for me and I were to name it, would I be more free? If this were true for me and I were to name it, would I be more free? So we create much of our own inertia, our absence of freedom, when we refuse to change. Richard Rohr wrote in The Naked Now, "The ego diverts your attention from anything that would ask you to change to righteous causes that invariably ask others to change." Our discipline is in looking honestly at ourselves, where we're holding back, or possibly denying a fuller expression of spirit. And discipline doesn't mean rigid. Discipline means calm persistence in the face of circumstances. That's discipline. Calm persistence in the face of circumstances. The divine plan is one of freedom. So to recap our freedom practices, daily, dedicated, spiritual practice, right thinking, and naming your good. So, this week as we dive into refining our spiritual practices, I invite you to join me in daily dedicated spiritual practice, in becoming more alive to enjoying life, to experiencing the everyday activities with love, with light, with freedom. For we are here to love and to be loved. We are here to give fully. We are here to give fully of the divinity of God that is within us. That is our greatest freedom, to let it flow through us, in us, and as us. So this week, let's engage in our freedom practices, for we are more free than we've ever been before, free to express the magnificence that is God. So let us be free. Let us welcome and live in that freedom, now and forevermore.